Good evening. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. An important and historic day. The President of the United States, Barack Obama, announces his re-election campaign on Facebook. He is now officially President Facebook. John Avlon of Newsweek and CNN is here. Mr. Avlon, it's exciting to see Facebook pushed into the presidential history books today with the announcement to the president's most fervent supporters.
It is, and the video he released really was illustrative. I mean, you saw right away he's focusing on states like Nevada, Colorado. They're targeting out North Carolina. An elderly gentleman in the video saying, "I don't agree with Obama all the time, but I trust him." I mean, it's a telegraphing of the playbook. It's just great.
And what we like about Electoral College debates right now is because John Avlon and John Batchelor, and we're joined now by David Drucker of Roll Call. We live for this stuff. I mean, this is how we actually think. We don't think
this is our NCAA.
Yeah, we don't think of it as Ohio. We think of it as 20 electoral votes. And so right now, David Drucker of Roll Call joins us. David, a very good evening to you.
Good evening, John.
We want to start with CR because one of the obstacles the president and the Republicans have is the present budget confrontation that we're told is a showdown high noon on Friday, the 8th of April. What can you tell us right now about what Roll Call is reporting on the negotiations in the House of Representatives, especially the Republican House, with regard to CR?
Well, what I can tell you, John, is that Republicans really want to be able to pass this thing with Republican votes only. That means 218, so that they do not have to rely on any Democratic votes. That is the goal. Because they want to present a unified conference, even if they don't get every one of their members, and they're at about 240-something, they can say that we did this without the Democrats, and that's the major goal. And so I think what is going on is that John Boehner and his negotiating team are trying to see exactly what they can squeeze out of Senate Democrats and the president. And you're looking here at a mixture of a level of spending cuts, which is important, but also these policy riders, for instance, gutting funding for Planned Parenthood, gutting funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And I think that depending on what Republicans can accomplish on those two ends, the policy riders and the level of spending cuts, will determine exactly how much money is cut, how much in spending is reduced, and how many, if any, of these policy riders are accepted. Fewer policy riders, larger cuts in spending. Fewer cuts in spending, a policy rider or two. And John Boehner's going to have to clear this with his conference. I don't believe that he's just going to show up and say, take it or leave it, I don't really care, because you just can't hurt cats that way. And so I think that while he's probably trying to keep his guys informed as they go along, once he feels he's got the best deal he can possibly get, he will go to them and tell them that and see if he can get them to sign off.
Is John Boehner committed to keeping the government open, or is he willing to let this shut down?
Well, John, it's a really good question, and I would put it like this. I don't think that John Boehner wants a government shutdown because the political peril is too uncertain. But I believe that the optics here are very important, and that John Boehner is approaching this as though he's going to get the best deal he possibly can to avoid shutdown, as opposed to any deal to avoid shutdown at all costs. Mm-hmm. Because if it appears as though he's trying to avoid shutdown at all costs, he will have more opposition from his freshman Republican and other conservatives in his conference, and he will ignite a firestorm among the activist base around the country, which won't help his cause.
Sure. And so, from your perch in Washington, Dave, what's your over-under on shutdown versus keeping the government open?
Well, you know, I started the week as sort of eight weeks. I should say over the weekend I was 80-20 shutdown was going to happen.
Wow.
Because I believed that Senate Democrats and the White House believe that shutdown benefits them and that they can put the Republicans in a box. However, after talking to my colleagues today and watching what is going on, I'm kind of nudging back into the 50-50 range, because I believe that over the last couple of week or two, the Republican leadership has done something smart. They've made sure that they have not appeared to be making deals of any kind to avoid shutdown. They once again shifted the rhetoric to the goal. We don't want to shut down, but the goal is to cut spending. The goal isn't to avoid a shutdown. And that was a very important rhetorical change to tell their conservative members and the base that we're willing to shut things down if the Democrats won't agree to enough spending cuts.
Mr. Avalon, and Mr. Drucker after that. Mr. Avalon, is your sense today that this shutdown story is not fresh, that it's used up its shelf date life, and that the fact that they keep recycling it means that they do not want it. The White House doesn't want it. The Democrats don't want it. The Republicans don't want it. And it's just a talking point now. I don't see any fire. Do you see any fire?
I think it's a mistake to shut the door on this. I happen to think that a shutdown is ultimately in no one's interest.
Right.
Especially, I think, you know, with the Ryan budget being presented tomorrow, I personally think that a shutdown would do that a great disservice. And ultimately, I think one of the strongest arguments that Republicans can make to the Tea Party base is, let's make a deal to keep the government open, and then let's focus on the big picture, the real cuts that actually matter. That has the added virtue of being true. I think that if a government shutdown probably does benefit Democrats and President Obama, but I think ultimately it's in no one's interest. And I think treating this as simply a talking point or negotiating tactic ignores the real danger that it could happen.
Mr. Drucker, the Ryan budget, $4 trillion over 10 years, that's about the 2012 election and the 2014 and the 2016. That's a long-term argument. That would be lost if the government shuts down. Correct?
That is correct. And don't forget, it's also about overhauling Medicare and Medicaid. And John Avalon makes a great point, and by a happy accident, the Ryan budget is going to be released tomorrow. This was not some sort of piece of grand strategy, and yet I think it does two things. One, it makes it easier for Republicans to make a deal on the CR and not be as upset about whether it's $30 billion or $60 billion, because they now have confidence that they're going to get to the real meat of what they really care about, and it's much easier to sell this to the base, because you can say, look, why are we going to quibble over a few billion dollars when the whole point is this $4 trillion budget cut plus overhauling Medicare and Medicaid that you really care about, and let's not obstruct that. And so because of the timing of this, which I'm told was not part of any grand strategy, I think, in a sense, it'll make it easier for a deal to occur.
Now, Mr. Avalon, what I follow Mr. Drucker's argument, and I think Paul Ryan is very careful, and he's going to present some good numbers, but these are campaign numbers. These are not numbers to be done in the 112th Congress. My puzzle here is, the president has allowed the Republicans to get out front of on this. Why?
You know, this is one of the great puzzles. Before State of the Union, I was arguing that the president should pull a Nixon in China and propose entitlement reform. I thought it would be a great way to really get the attention of independents who'd abandoned him over the course of his first 2 years, show he was serious about fiscal responsibility, etc. Instead, he seemed to play a different game. He decided to play poker and let the Republicans propose the serious cuts first. I think that's effectively the strategic decision that he made, and that's why he's let Republicans take the reins. I think in the long run, it's a lost opportunity and a mistake.
Mr. Drucker, let's talk presidential reelection right now. 60% is the number of presidents who get reelected when they announced. In the 20th century, there's just a handful of Democrats who have ever reannounced for reelection. Woodrow Wilson in 16, FDR several times, 36, 40, and 44, successful all that time. Not again until Jimmy Carter in 1980, and he lost. Not again until Bill Clinton in 1996, and he won handily. So it's a significant event when a Democratic president announces. David, how does the president's reelect look from the point of view of Senate? Move over to your Senate hat, David. How does the Senate regard the president's reelection, Democrats and Republicans?
Well, you know, I'd say at this point they probably don't give it too much regard in terms of the overall playing field, but I know that in particular states, candidates for re-election or potential candidates for re-election want to know that they're not going to get swamped by the Obama ground game, which they expect to be just as refined and effective, if not more so, in 2012 as it was in 2008. Now, having said that, I think many Republicans, at least, believe that the luster is off of the Obama magic. He's human. He's talented and worthy but he is no longer a magician, and they believe that he's beatable. But I've talked to Senate candidates who have said that they made sure before announcing their plans to run that their state party and things of that nature were in a position or would be in a position to compete with any Obama onslaught on the ground. So in that regard, I think that's how the Senate plays into the presidential election. Beyond that, it just so happens because of who won, you know, 6 years ago and who's up this time around that it's a good map for Republicans. And if the politics don't turn on their head as they did last cycle from the beginning until the end, which is possible, but if they don't, Republicans just stand to win some seats because these are Republican-leaning states. And even in Republican-leaning states or Democratic-leaning states, if you have a candidate that does well in general, even if they lose, if they don't get trounced, there's still an upsurge for their side. I mean, even John McCain managed to win Missouri, for instance, and he lost some other states closely. So it's still a good year to run if you're a Republican, given the playing field this time around.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more that the Republican Senate chances look very, very strong just because of the sheer numbers. But I'm going to press you on some specific states because I'm interested in what you're hearing about the president's coattails or drag. Let's take a look at talk to me about Pennsylvania, Virginia, Ohio, and Florida. These are going to be hotly contested states. Senate races up in all of them. What's the buzz on the ground in terms of the candidates?
Well, the buzz is that they're going to be tough races because you've mentioned some very tough states, and Pennsylvania, for instance, continues to be a problem for Republicans, notwithstanding how they did in 2010. But it all begins with candidate recruitment and who runs. So before I can really give you a readout on Ohio or Florida, I need to know who the Republican nominee is going to be.
Sure.
The same with Pennsylvania. I think Sherrod Brown is, in general, too liberal for Ohio, but people like him. But he's beatable in a presidential year and without Bush fatigue to boost him. It just depends on who runs and how they perform.
Let's concentrate on Virginia. 13 electoral votes won by the president in 2008. They need Kane. The Democrats need Kane, don't they, David?
They do, and it still might not be enough because he's no longer Tim Kaine, who reminds me of Mark Warner. He's Tim Kaine, who's been doing what Barack Obama asked him to do. However, it would be a significant boost. It would be an emotional boost, and if anybody is going to have a good chance in Virginia in 2012, it would be Kaine or somebody like him, and particularly Kaine because they voted for him before and they did like him.
Does Obama help Casey or Casey help Obama in a state like Pennsylvania?
You know, John, that is a great question. I think it depends on who the Republicans nominate and kind of what the politics look like going forward. Obama is the kind of guy that can help somebody like Casey, who's kind of dry. On the other hand, the Casey name in Pennsylvania is an institution, and he's exactly the right kind of Democrat for that state. So at the end of the day, it might be a guy like Casey who helps Obama.
The President of the United States, Barack Obama, has announced his reelection plan, and that's the excuse that Avalon, Batchelor, and Drucker are using to already be arguing the Electoral College map. Gosh, I missed this, John. Didn't we? What were we doing for 2 years when we couldn't argue
Feels
them?
Feels good.
Oh, 29 electoral votes in Florida. We got to get to that argument. David Drucker of Roll Call, John Avalon of Newsweek and CNN, and me, I'm a political junkie. My name is John Batchelor.